Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the sunny, wonderful city of Los Angeles, California, where Los Doyers try and go up 2-0 on the Atlanta Braves. As you may have heard from the great Dan Beyer, Cleveland and Houston still scoreless. In Houston, the bottom of the third inning. And of course, this coming a day after a Rockies comeback, but then ultimately a Brewers win. Playoff baseball is here. 4-game Friday is here. If you like baseball, today's a great day. If you don't, it's cool, man. Like, don't worry about it. Got a great fight in MMA and UFC this weekend. We got some awesome college football to get to. And, of course, some premier NFL games and reaction to last night's NFL game upcoming. Let me kind of quickly set the table for you on the guests we have coming on. Man, this is a really good day. Congrats to Cindy Katz and to Ryan Music, who worked together to book this show. John Middlecoff, former NFL scout, 3 and Out podcast. If you haven't heard the 3 and Out podcast, go to the Herd Podcast Network. You can check out my new All Ball podcast. That's basketball. And Middlecoff does football. He's awesome. Great energy, incredible insight. He'll be joining us here in 15 minutes. John Clayton's going to join us. He's got his own website going now. Of course, he's got a special spot in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. John Clayton will join us in just over an hour. And then Michael Lombardi. So many of you text me or tweet me, when is Lombardi coming on this week? When can I learn more about the NFL? Michael Lombardi, former GM, author, scout, will join us upcoming in the third hour of the show, 2:20 West Coast, 5:20 East Coast. So just stick with us here. We got picks to get to. Some interesting discussion on Cam Newton, which comes from a Twitter beef I have with Marcellus Wiley. Kyrie is the anti-LeBron. I'll tell you how. And the biggest game of the weekend that might not be covered like the biggest game of the weekend, but it may be a loser pack your stuff, your season is over type of game in the National Football League. Man, do we have a lot to get to. But let's start with the obvious. We told you so. And we didn't tell you so because we knew how. We just knew what. Right? Like, I couldn't tell you how. If I watched 2 weeks ago, I think we had Mark Schlereth on 2 weeks ago, right? And I was ready to hit the panic button. Ready to hit the panic button. I'm like, man, Tom Brady's in his 40s. All these rumors of discontent with him and Belichick. They traded away a guy who's killing it with the Rams at wide receiver and don't appear to have enough talent at wide receiver. Don't have speed defensively, not getting in the backfield. Like, yeah. But we have 18 years of data to tell us don't bail on the Patriots, right? We have recent history to tell us don't bail on the Patriots. And what have they done over the past 2 weeks? In division, they thumped the Miami Dolphins. And then last night, they take care of business against the Indianapolis Colts, who did cut it to within a touchdown, and then they flex their muscles, and Tom Brady threw his second touchdown pass. That's his 500th of his career. Here was Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champion, Fox, NFL on Fox analyst 2 weeks ago.
There's very few guys that ever were kind of the actuators of offense that played wide receiver. In New England, it's unquestioned in my mind is Julian Edelman. And when he does make his comeback after his suspension, I would expect things to settle down a little bit for that offense. But he is the guy that brings energy. He's the guy that brings attitude. He's the guy that's always, you know, picking a fight. He is that guy.
That guy, right? You can't – the thing about sports that stat guy misses, and I understand that stat guy has had a bigger role in sports in the last 10 years – than in all the 100 years before combined, right? From what the A's have done over the last 25 years or 20 years or so to what the Houston Rockets are doing to analytics now creeping into football, stat guy suddenly has a seat at the table, He used to be the dorky, zit-popping guy who just did, it used to be called rotisserie baseball. Now, fantasy guy has become analytics guy, and they have a spot at the table. But the reason that most of them don't run the meetings, most of them don't coach the teams. I mean, look, it's the most interesting thing from this Red Sox-Yankees series, which is the Yankees fought Joe Girardi, their former manager, tooth and nail for him to use more analytics. And so instead, they settle upon Aaron Boone, who will use analytics, but Aaron Boone was born into a baseball family. His grandpa played, his dad played and managed. He played, his brother played. Now he's managing. He covered the game like baseball is. He was born basically on a baseball field, and you're going to take away all that inherent, innate knowledge and just go like, well, the numbers say this. Well, like, look, numbers do have a, numbers are important, but so too are intangibles. Intangibles. And Julian Edelman, 7 catches, 57 yards. Those are important. But they get James White going. They get Gronk, 6 catches now. Josh Gordon catches that touchdown pass, albeit it was thrown into double coverage and frankly underthrown, and he made an incredible adjustment. They get Philip Dorsett working as well. So I think it's really fascinating to see the intangibles that Edelman has, the evolution of Tom Brady within this offense, how they figured out Sony Michel can be an every down back and he can chew up some yards and chew up some clock and give that defense, which is can give that defense some time off the football field. We didn't know how. Like, nobody really knew. Like, how are they going to win? I don't know. Like, the only fallback you can have on the Patriots was, well, you know, their division stinks. You know? Should be pointed out, their next two games are against two of the elite teams in the NFL. One, the best offense in the NFL, that's the Chiefs next Sunday night. Then they turn around, they play on the road against the Bears, arguably the best defense and most dynamic pass rush in the league. And then they get the Bills, the Packers, the Titans. They still have some tough teams before they settle back into division at home. But here are the New England Patriots, who, I mean, look, dead as a doornail against the Jags. Crushed by the Lions, who have been utterly and completely unimpressive otherwise. At 1-2, everybody was grabbing a bucket saying, maybe this boat's got a hole that is not fixable. I didn't know how it was going to happen. Nobody I knew how it was going to, well, the Edelman. And they'll figure it out. And sure enough, that's exactly what they have done. They found a way to figure it out. So here's what I want you to do when you're driving right now and you're sitting at your desk, you're listening to this podcast, you're going into a meeting, or you're going to meet with some buddies tonight to watch some baseball, tomorrow to watch some college football, or maybe to watch the fight, or maybe Sunday. Repeat after me. Never count out the Patriots. Never count out the Patriots. All right, this is Kansas basketball in the Big 12. This is Alabama football. It's just a thing. They figure it out. And the difference in an Alabama football, it's more Kansas basketball. No matter what they look like early in the year, like end of the year, you're like, man, they're going to win their division and they're going to be in the playoffs. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and the New England Patriots are the team to beat in the AFC East, and you're just going to have to deal with probably going to Foxborough for a playoff game if you want to get to a Super Bowl. And oh yeah, by the way, I can't help but point out that I got into a bit of a Twitter kerfuffle with Marcellus Wiley, a longtime friend and now new colleague at Fox, as he wants to point out that Andrew Luck is overrated. Did you watch last night? I mean, let's seriously break down what we saw. The Indianapolis Colts have zero talent. None. They don't have talent. Their best receiving option is Eric Ebron, who the Lions watched walk out the door. They have no running game. That's why he throws it so often. And they have no defense at all. They should have at least tied the Titans last week, and they were at least competitive last night. Andrew Luck off of shoulder surgery, hadn't played in 2 years. Are you aware he's leading the league in passing yards? Now, some of that is because his team stinks. But some of that is because Andrew Luck is, he's not as good as he was billed to be. He's actually better. He's not underrated. He's not overrated. He's underrated. Like, I get people who, and this is what Marcellus tweeted was, you know, Cam Newton, guys get onto Cam Newton and look at Cam Newton's record. Like, dude, Cam Newton plays for a competent organization. Cam Newton played with one of the top defenses in football. Cam Newton's team had been built around offensive line. And look, Cam Newton, this isn't the media calling out Cam Newton. If you think the media is anti-Cam Newton, the media voted him MVP. The media voted him Heisman Trophy winner. There's no more false narrative in the history of sports than the media doesn't like Cam Newton. Because the media voted him for the two most prestigious awards, one in college and one in the NFL. So you're gonna have to try another route there. You're like, oh well, they're just against him. Like, no, we're not. We just realize he's not an accurate passer. We just realize he's not great in the red zone. You know how we realize that? Because two former star wide receivers, Steve Smith, a borderline Hall of Famer, and Kelvin Benjamin, both said the exact same thing about playing with Cam Newton. You know, he's just not really that accurate or that good in the red zone at reading progressions and being accurate. And no one's disputing any of this. No one's disputing any of this. Dude, Andrew Luck plays with a crummy team. He inherited the worst team in the National Football League, a team that had gotten completely old and that parted ways with parts. People thought, well, they tried to be bad after when Peyton Manning was hurt. It wasn't just they tried to be bad. They were bad. They were accomplishing their tasks. Yes. I mean, this is like, well, they weren't tanking. They were just bad. They were awful. Their star players all got old collectively at once, from Bob Sanders retired to the two rush ends that they parted ways with. Edgerrin James was gone. Peyton Manning was gone. Like, all of the stars that had been a dominant team for a decade, they were all gone. And then they had a complete idiot as their general manager. And they were poorly coached. Outside of that, Mrs. Lincoln, how is the show? Need I remind you that Chuck Pagano called a fake punt where they directly snapped it to a wide receiver who was playing under center and he was surrounded by five New England Patriots? Do you guys remember when that happened? Their general manager traded for Trent Richardson, traded a first-round pick, the fourth pick in the draft. They traded for Trent Richardson when everybody in the league knew he stunk. Their intentions were to surround him with a better team than Peyton Manning was. That's what their owner said. Hey, you know, we had Peyton Manning. We only got him to a couple Super Bowls. Now we want to win a couple, at least a couple, with Andrew Luck. You only have guys like this ever so often. And they've done the opposite of that. Dude, they're terrible. And oh yeah, by the way, not only are they at a talent deficit in comparison to the Patriots, who are on a crazy talented team, but Frank Reich wasn't supposed to be their head coach. Josh McDaniels was. And their best offensive weapon outside of Luck was T.Y. Hilton. He didn't play last night. They were without six starters. A team that's not any good anyway without six starters, including their best pass catcher. So to the Andrew Luck is overrated, the actual answer, if you ask anybody in the NFL, they'll say, yeah, exactly, he's underrated. He's kind of awesome. If you thought he wouldn't come back and throw a football, why is he leading the league in passing yards? They're actually competitive with a completely depleted roster. And the media doesn't hate Cam Newton. The media voted him MVP and Heisman Trophy winner. His own former teammates are the ones that have taken shots at him.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I told you something over the summer. I have good sources in Boston, and I've never been somebody who reacts to rumors around the NBA when I can call people in the NBA. Now, I'll admit, the people I talked to, when they told me about Kyrie Irving this summer, they're like, Look, we're not going to sit here and tell you we know exactly what he's thinking. But boy, based upon the way he acts, the things he says to us, doesn't feel like he's going to go somewhere. Either he's completely duping us, that we have been duped, we have been fooled. Or here's the other possibility. Or he's not going anywhere. He loves the professionalism. He loves playing for Brad. He plays for the best GM in the NBA. They got a chance to win a couple championships. A coach who everyone knows can do it. Players around him. And they got young guys who are going to get better. They're not going to get worse. You know, barring injury, the Celtics are the favorite to come out of the East. That puts him head up with a team like the Warriors. And the Warriors have a ton of decisions to make this offseason. And the only decision to make this offseason for the Celtics is Kyrie coming back? Take a listen to what Kyrie Irving said on the court at Boston Garden yesterday during their fan fest.
It's quite important, and I appreciate that scout. I joined him, but I shared it with some of my teammates as well as the organization and everyone else in Boston. If you guys will have me back, I plan on re-signing here next year.
You guys didn't play the crowd noise? You didn't play the reaction, Ramos? Ramos was like, Ramos is an old-time Laker fan. He just can't take it. He cut out the reaction. But this is where Kyrie Irving is. Hey, I learned from the LeBron thing. I'm not doing the LeBron thing. People ask all the time, like, why would you leave LeBron when you had a chance to win a championship? And the reasons are pretty obvious. He knew LeBron was going. He was tired of playing on LeBron's team. And every year you end up having to answer questions about what's LeBron going to do in this offseason. It becomes tiresome and tedious, and you can't just go to work and play basketball and compete. It's hard enough to win as it is. It's made more difficult when you have to answer questions. And I think LeBron has even learned from that. Like, man, I got to sign a long-term contract. I got to stop fooling around with the Lakers. Don't fool around with the Lakers, because people just don't love that. They just don't love the every year free agency thing, every year discussion. And so Kyrie Irving coming off his knee being cleaned up. And for people who don't know, remember when he broke his kneecap? This is like 4 years ago in the NBA Finals in game one, right? They had already lost Kevin Love in a game against the Celtics. They're playing against the Warriors in the finals. It goes to overtime and his kneecap breaks. Remember that? Well, part of the surgery to fix the kneecap was he had three screws put into his knee, and then it was kind of held together by this mesh wiring. And at first last year, the mesh wiring was irritating his skin, and he just felt like it was a nuisance and a pain. They took the mesh wiring out, and there was still something wrong with the knee. They found out that one of the screws, maybe two of the screws, were infected. They had to get them out immediately. Because if the bone becomes infected, now your kneecap can break apart, become brittle, and now you never play again. So it was just more precautionary clean out move, and you combine that with Gordon Hayward being out. They went to the NBA West Eastern Conference Finals Game 7 without him and without Hayward, their two best players. So I told you guys this summer, I mean, all I've heard is he's super happy there, loves the professionalism, loves the guys show up to, they have practice, whereas they weren't practicing in Cleveland last year, didn't practice that much in previous years. There is no turnstile at head coach. There is no players making the decision as head coach. There's just young talent and guys to get after, and he's kind of the alpha with the basketball. Now, it doesn't mean that it's officially official. This is more like Facebook official, but committing and saying like, hey, I told everybody I'm coming back if you'll have me. That's as close to it as you get, and that's Kyrie Irving saying, we're not going to talk about that this year. I've learned from what it's like to play on teams where people don't know what their stars are going to do in the offseason, and that's just tiresome, tedious, and I don't have the energy to go rebuild. This idea that you have to get to New York, that Kyrie wants to get to New York and have his own team, why? When I'm in Boston, better franchise, better GM, you know, more proven coach, even though everybody loves David Fizdale. I don't need to move. Let guys come to me. I think it's pretty smart.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
He's an absolute legend in the business, one of the all-time great NFL insiders. He's John Clayton. Go to johnclaytonfootball.com if you want to learn more than he's going to teach us over the next 10 to 15 minutes or so. John, thanks so much for spending time. Among the things that people should know about you, you are a native of Pittsburgh, I believe. That's where you cut your teeth. And I look at this weekend, I'm like, man, another home game against the Falcons team that's probably better than their record. I don't know if you go must win this early in the season, but 1-3-1 in that division where the Browns are suddenly competitive is not a great way to start. How important do you think this Sunday's game is?
No, it's vital. I mean, because what? They haven't won a home game since last year. And now you're going to lose. I mean, they lose a home game to Baltimore. Now, they could lose this one. I mean, and right now the season's going right down the dumpster. I mean, you look at all the problems that they have. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's not going to show up till week 7, which is a bye week. That really helps them out. Then they've got Ben Roethlisberger really not getting in sync with a 100-yard game yet with Antonio Brown. James Washington, their number 3 receiver, has not really stepped up after a great preseason. That's not going well. And then the defense has been just carved up. So, no, at 1-2-1, they dropped to 1-3-1. I mean, there's a potential now that they could be 2.5 games behind 2 teams in the division, and their season's rapidly firing away.
You have more insight than most anybody who covers the sport. John Clayton joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. Le'Veon apparently told guys in the offense, hey, I'll be there week 1 of the season. That's why they were so mad when he didn't show up. And then his agent leaked out, week 10 is more like it. Now all of a sudden it's week 7. Why the change?
Well, I mean, first off, he had to come in because he needed to get a year vested to make sure that they can just repeat with the franchise tag, and he really just loses a year of service in that. So he had to do something, whether it was coming in November with 6 games remaining or coming in. And so I think here's his tact on this. And again, it's not a great one, but it's one that he's doing. So you figure you come in week 7 or 8. The team has an exemption on you for 2 weeks. So you can still get an $855,000 paycheck if they wish for not doing anything. Then you come in, if you have to play, then you're, instead of getting 400 carries, which he feared would beat down his body, now you're maybe getting a little over 200 to 250 touches a game or a season for the rest of the year. So that's the strategy there. And why 7 and 8? Hey, that's right where the trade deadline is. And so now you get there in time, sign your contract, and if they want to move you or you want to be moved, again, not limited number of teams that will be involved, then that could happen. So that, I think, is a strategy. One, to save his body, get less touches, and then see if he can touch off some kind of a trade.
John, do you think that he will be traded?
No, I don't. I think, he is a possibility. I think there's interest in Philadelphia. There's interest in the Jets, but there's very few teams that can really fit him into the cap, and there's not a lot of teams right now looking for running backs. And so those would be the only two, and I don't think either one would be able to offer something satisfactory to the Steelers. So in the end, and again, they may take the tack at that time. If they're sitting there, with a 2-4-1 record, maybe they'll say, okay, we'll give a little bit of a discount sale and just move on. Because at this stage, the only thing they'll be able to get for Le'Veon Bell after this season is a 3rd-round compensatory pick in 2020.
John Clayton joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Look, I think the Raiders thing is fascinating. There's been a lot of negativity from fans around the league over dealing Khalil Mack, but that comes after people in the league said, well, they'll never get 2 first-round picks for Khalil Mack, and they did. Gruden seems to be taking a long-term approach while undercutting Reggie McKenzie's power and some of the moves he's made in the past. What's your take on what's going on in Oakland?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the fear, I think, when you have a coach as the main guy acquiring talent. I mean, it becomes messy, and you can see how messy it is. I mean, it even got messy this week when basically he threw Reggie McKenzie under the bus by saying, yeah, well, he took 2 safeties in each of the last second rounder 2 years ago and a first rounder last year, and now he wanted Derwin James, and Derwin James is having a great season with the Los Angeles Chargers. And so you have that, and then you have a roster right now with 14 to 15 guys in their 30s, and now the complaint is, boy, there's not a lot of speed on defense. Well, duh, you don't have a lot of youth on defense. They've had injuries that have really wiped out most of the defensive line, and so it's a mess. You can see that coaching-wise, he'll be fine. I mean, he's got a good growth thing going on right now with Derek Carr. He's getting the most out of Marshawn Lynch. That's encouraging. But what happens now, they get into the second half and things fall apart on defense. And I know John has already said, it's like, hey, it's hard to find defensive ends. Well, you had a pass-rushing defensive end who right now is the MVP. Gave him away.
John Clayton joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. What about Chicago? The defense looks great. Trubisky's stat line last game was incredible. But there is a certain sense, hey, when the Matt Nagy play calling, when the preset plays run out, now since Trubisky leaves a lot to be desired, they're surprisingly really, really competitive. Heck, they're downright good. They're on a bye week to get Miami on the road next week. What's the league saying, though, about Trubisky now they're getting a chance to see him second time around?
Well, the big thing is that it's a shame that they had the bye week this week, because you wanted to see how much of that was Trubisky and how much of it was going to be the Tampa Bay defense, which is right now the worst in football. And so, because I know I was on the sidelines for the week two Monday night game. And, I mean, you can see once the script was done, 15 to 17 plays, that he was great in the script. But, you know, it starts to fall apart. I mean, he throws 4 or 5 yard passes. You know, he has to try to, his accuracy seems to go. He rushes things a little bit. Now, that got right going against Tampa Bay. And maybe what happens is that's the big step that he needs to take it for the entire game. But after the 17 plays for the first three games, it was very spotty. Now, again, how much of it was the Bucs defense? How much of it was Mitch Trubisky? One thing we know for sure, the combination of Matt Nagy and Trubisky ultimately is going to be a very good one. He's great coming from Kansas City and that system. I mean, you can see he's got the talent in Trubisky. It's just a matter of getting him out of the script and doing things after the first quarter.
You look at Denver and the collapse in the fourth quarter against the Kansas City Chiefs. It wasn't so much their defense relenting to Pat Mahomes. That you could see happening, as Mahomes has been immensely dominant here so far in the season. It's their offense and, you know, bringing in Case Keenum and not being able to score against the worst defense in the sport coming into the game. How secure is Vance Joseph, a guy who almost lost his job after 1 year last year?
Yeah, I think he's in a shaky situation now again. And it was funny because, you know, being there for that game and talking to people, it seemed like all the Bronco people were saying, okay, well, tough game against the Chiefs, but boy, if things go bad and they lose to the Jets, it could really get the season out of control. And I'm thinking, what? Because it's a pretty good team. But, I mean, you can see there's definite problems on offense. I mean, Case Keenum, I don't think has had a touchdown pass, since the first game when he had 3. His interception totals, because, you know, he'll tend to try to be a little bit of a gunslinger, which he stayed away from in Minnesota last year, but now his interception totals about 5 or 6. They have the running game going, and that's encouraging, but it's been inconsistent with the passing game. So that has to be a concern. And then on defense, I think what happened against the Chiefs basically was that they fatigued, the Broncos did, in the second half. And that you can see is both a mental fatigue and also a physical fatigue, because they did a great job of playing some soft zone in the first 2 downs and really containing Mitch Trubisky. I mean, you're controlling Pat Mahomes. He wasn't able to get the ball downfield, so that was encouraging. And then the second part of it was that, he came back and they started to run the ball because they were in a soft zone. Once the running started going, the fatigue started going in, and then he started getting hot and moving around, and he just wore him out in the second half.
Sam Bradford's now been deactivated. He's losing money by the week. Philadelphia was able to flip into a first-round draft pick. Any sense that Arizona's going to be able to move Sam Bradford to get something in return?
No, I think it's going to be impossible because I know $312,000 a week is in a roster bonus, and that's going because now he's a third-string quarterback. He's not on the active roster, but you're still talking about a $20 million contract. Now, the signing bonus part of it's already gone, but I think it's going to be tough. And then you start to wonder, okay, what Sam Bradford are you going to get? Are you going to get the one that completed 71% of his passes at Minnesota, or are you going to get the one that Mike Zimmer said has a degenerative knee and couldn't get the ball downfield with Arizona? So I think there has to be, but I think it's going to be hard to get value right now for Sam.
What about Dez Bryant? You know, he went from kind of blowing off the Browns interview, which we saw in Hard Knocks, to openly opining for the Patriots. They brought in all kinds of wide receivers not named Dez Bryant. Now he even went so far as to say, hey, look, my first preference is still to go to the Dallas Cowboys, a team he crushed on Twitter after being released. What's your sense of whether or not Dez Bryant plays in the NFL this year?
I mean, somebody's got to sign him because he's too good of a talent not to be signed. It's just a matter of what team is going to take what could be a potential headache, because if things don't go right for Dez on the field, then he tends to blow things up on the field or on the sidelines, and so that becomes a problem. And so, I mean, is it worth taking that risk that you're going to have some potential problems with Dez. But again, when you need a receiver, you need something. I mean, you saw that the Patriots made the move and they trade for Josh Gordon. I mean, somebody, I mean, for example, you look at a team like San Francisco. Now, they're probably not going anywhere, losing their quarterback and their running back. But let's say that they were off to a better start. You know, with the injuries that they've had at the wide receiver position, they could have reached out. But somebody will do it. I think it just has to look at the injury list and see who's wiped out. You know, the one would be interesting. As we're following today, now it's not going to happen this week, is that the Packers are down potentially three wide receivers. You know, Randall Cobb's already out. Two other receivers have to wait till tomorrow to see if they're going to be able to play. Their top three receivers are all banged up. If they have to carry those injuries over for a week or two, maybe that could be a team that would consider it. But again, maybe not.
Yeah, it does not seem like that'll happen. Dalvin Cook, you think he plays? I know he's going to try and give it a go. Minnesota, once again, just crushed by injuries. Take on the Eagles, who have been a little bit disappointing so far this year. What are you hearing about Dalvin Cook?
Yeah, I mean, he is questionable game time decision, but I think he'll be active, but how good he's going to be able to play, because and even this is like even from the middle of the preseason, that burst hasn't been there yet. I mean, it just seems that, you know, he's still – he hasn't got the ability to really explode yet. And so my guess would be, you know, you bring him and have him do 7 or 8 carries just to try to get him going and get him positive. But, you know, it's still a question mark. You know, he's been limited in practice and right now questionable on the injury report.
Great stuff. John Clayton, go to johnclaytonfootball.com. John, thanks so much for checking in with us. We appreciate your insight so much on Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, thank you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Michael Lombardi is a former general manager of the National Football League. I would implore you to pick up Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the National Football League. It is on sale now. It is excellent. Look, I hadn't jumped ship, but many people had. The Patriots looked bad against Jacksonville. They made Blake Bortles look like a top five quarterback in the NFL. And I guess we should have figured out that, hey, Miami was a little bit fraudulent. And Indy's you know, one of the bottom five in terms of overall talent in the league. And they didn't have T.Y. Hilton as well as five other starters last night. But it feels like the Patriots are figuring it out. Am I wrong to think it's not just the opponent, it's the Patriots getting better?
Well, I think, look, you know, getting Edelman back is a huge help. And then having Josh Gordon on the outside gives them some help. They had, you know, they lost three players last year. They lost Brandon Cooks, that's 65 catches. They lost Danny Amendola, that's 61 catches. And they lost Deion Lewis, that's 900 yards. And before Jacksonville and after Jacksonville, none of those three guys were been replaced. Sonny Michel didn't do anything. He did against the Miami, and he came out last night again, played well. That replaced Deion Lewis. And then we saw Edelman come back. He'll certainly replace Danny Amendola. And then Josh Gordon has given him some presence on the outside. So, you know, I think that's the missing piece. But I think when you watch the Patriots, it's still going to come down to, can they get better on defense? Can they get faster? Are they going to be able to compete against a really good Kansas City team that comes into town next Sunday night to face them?
Mm. And what's the answer to that? Can you get, I mean, getting faster defensively? That seems to be hard to think.
The answer always for the Patriots is always about first half point differential. It's always about building the lead. The Patriots always have had their offense set the tempo like it did last night. They get off to a fast start. If they force one punt, the game starts to become a 14-0 game, and they play from in front. And that's how they do things, and that's how they've done it very well. And earlier in the season, because their offense struggled, the defensive problems, which have always been there, became magnified. And I think what you saw last night, look, the Colts might be 1-4, but they're a good 1-4 team if there is such a thing. They've been in every game other than one last night into the fourth quarter. They've had chances to win every game they've played in. Yep. Into the fourth quarter. They're the best red zone, they're the best third down team in football going into last night, and they converted 47% of them last night without T.Y. Hilton. So I think the Colts are a good team. I think that the fact the Patriots gave up points to them really is not a bad omen for the Patriots, but I think their offense controlled the pace, and that's what has to happen all the time.
All right, Michael Lombardi, who is an absolute legend in the profession. Front office football, he's an absolute legend. Pick up his book, Gridiron Genius, Masterclass, Winning Championships and Building Dynasties in the NFL. If you go out and name the elite coaches, going back, obviously, to the Niners staff in the 80s that dominated and changed football forever. You worked there all the way, you know, working with Belichick. So I'm going to ask you, Andrew Luck, your opinion on this, what?
I think it's coming. I think it's really starting to come. I think the first couple weeks of the season, he didn't trust his fastball. And there were guys wide open, and he wouldn't throw the ball in the tight windows. And the last couple weeks, he started to throw the ball in the tight windows. Is it back to where it was 3 years ago? No. Is it going to get there? Yeah, I hope it will. I think it's starting to come. I think the more strength he gets, the more confidence he gets in his arm that he can drive the ball into tight windows, I think you're going to see him do it. Look, interceptions have always been a part of Andrew Luck's game. He's always challenged that edge. And, I mean, there's so many times when he was having great success that you could put together a tape of Andrew Luck's dropped interceptions, and it would have tilted the balance. This kid has always taken chances. And I think, frankly, having the arm issues that he's had has helped him not throw as many interceptions. Now, he threw three last night, but I think it helped him because he's not trying to force the ball into tight windows.
Well, but there are some in the media that say, man, he's so overrated. You're a front office guy. What is the belief in the NFL in terms of how he's regarded?
I think you can win a Super Bowl with the player. I think he's really smart. He can do things at the line of scrimmage. He can make plays with his feet. He's accurate with the football. And as they get better around him, they'll be a better team. Look, they're paying a price for the Ryan Grigson administration that happened in Indianapolis. I mean, that really wasn't very good. And you're talking to a guy that Ryan Grigson traded a first-round pick for Trent Richardson's to. So they have not done a good job surrounding Andrew Luck. I mean, they've made some bad decisions. They didn't fit the offensive or defensive line. And unfortunately, Andrew Luck's paid a price for that with the shoulder injury. I do think the kid's going to come around. I think he's going to be a really good player. Will he make mistakes? Sure, they all will. But I think if you're going to build a team, I think Andrew Luck's the guy you want to build a team around.
I watched Monday Night Football. And look, I'm with everybody on Mahomes. And I had NFL guys tell me before Mahomes, you know, broke out this season, they were like, Mahomes, what they're building, his arm talent, his brain, his legs, he's the real deal. My takeaway from Monday was more Broncos got problems there. You know, 65 straight times they'd won at home with a double-digit lead and going against the worst defense in the sport. Case Keenum can't move the ball, can't get first downs, can't get points. You need to keep scoring against Kansas City, and they can't do it. Am I wrong with that as a takeaway?
Well, you could add one more can to that, is they couldn't convert a third down in the fourth quarter, and the Chiefs converted four of them. So there's another can for you. Yeah, look, I think if you're John Elway and you're driving home, and I said this on my podcast, the GM Street, if you're driving home that night after the game, you've got to be sick to your stomach, not because you lost the game, but the fact that Mahomes is the best quarterback in the division, and you paid $18 million for a guy who's essentially a backup quarterback. And the other thing that's got to drive you absolutely crazy when you're driving home, if you're John Elway, is the fact that your defense can't hold the lead. Von Miller's passed the quarterback every play. If the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to win this week and they're going to beat Patrick Mahomes, they're going to do it with their rush. You don't cover great quarterbacks. You rush great quarterbacks and how you control them in the pocket. Your ends don't get past the quarterback. The worst place to be in football is 2 yards past the quarterback because he's yet to turn and run that way. And against Denver, that's all Denver did. They raced up the field. Mahomes stepped up into the pocket, went out, and threw for almost 200 yards when he left the pocket. Look, Jacksonville can beat them this week, even in Kansas City, if their rush plan is solid and disciplined.
Michael Lombardi joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I'm hesitant on the Titans, and I'll tell you why. I watched what Jack Del Rio did a couple years ago with the Raiders, and there was a little bit of luck there, right? Like they went for it on fourth down. They went for two instead of kicking extra points, and they had kind of a magical year. But am I wrong? Is this Titans thing for real?
Well, look, they haven't turned the ball over. The first week of the season they did, and they've won three straight. They've won ugly. You got to give them credit for mental toughness. I'm with you. I'm not buying them as a team. I mean, last week Mariota made some great plays with his feet. He converted a 4th-and-15, a 4th-and-4. Their defense played really well against the Carson Wentz, the Eagles. They put pressure on. You know, the Houston game, they made a couple plays in that game with their special teams that won the game. I just don't know how long this is going to go. Could I see them getting upset in Buffalo? Absolutely. I think Tennessee, their receiving core isn't great. Corey Davis looked like a star last week playing against the Eagles secondary, which has often given up a lot of plays. So I think they're going to have to prove it to me. To me, Tennessee's a team that's 8-8. They're going to have some moments of good. They're going to have some moments of bad. And I think at the end of the day, they'll be 8-8.
Let me ask you about the Eagles. They take on the Vikings, and here's two teams that people thought could both go to the Super Bowl. Vikings invested a ton in quarterback, but they got all kinds of injuries. But the Eagles were told, hey, when they get Carson Wentz back, Alshon Jeffrey back, they'll be fine. Suddenly the offensive line can't block, right? And the and as good as the defensive line was, and it won them that Atlanta game, it hasn't won them more than one other game since. What's going on in Philadelphia?
I think you said it right there. The defensive line hasn't been able to. Look, the Eagles' defensive secondary hasn't covered anybody in 2 years. I don't see why anybody can't understand this. They gave up 613 yards in 26 minutes to the Patriots, yet they won the game. The yeah. Eagles have always played defense. They played single headers. They played 26 minutes, 27. That's all. When they have to play over 30 minutes, they get exposed. And if their defensive line can't dominate the game with pressure, they miss Tim Jernigan badly. If they can't dominate the game with their defensive front, teams are going to move the ball. I mean, Eli Manning, the reason he's still the quarterback in New York and the reason he's still the Giants didn't draft another quarterback this year when they had the second pick of the draft is because they all cited the two Eagle games against this great Eagle defense that Eli threw the ball against. Well, the Eagles can't cover anybody. What they do well is rush the passer and create turnovers. That's what they've done. And this year, they're not the same team in the defensive line. They missed Jernigan. The other area they're not the same is Carson Wentz on third down. Carson Wentz last year on third down averaged over 9 yards per attempt. 9 yards per attempt on third down. That's rare. This year he's back to five, just slightly under six, which is the norm, and I think that's been the problem.
Aaron Rodgers came out critical of Mike McCarthy, critical of the play calling as well as not getting the ball to his more talented wide receivers, had some drops from some of the younger guys. Does Aaron Rodgers have a legit beef with his head coach?
Well, I think oftentimes, you know, the Packers have always been a young team and they relied on some younger players without experience. I think they need to get their core. They rotate too many players. I think Aaron Jones is the best running back on their team. They need to play him. And I think Ty Montgomery can give them a specialty player where they can move him around a little bit. But I think they have to be more diversified and give the scheme a little bit more of a chance. You know, when you have Rodgers back at quarterback, you kind of cheat the system a little bit because he's so good at making plays with his feet. And now that he's got the knee, he can't quite do it. This is going to be a tough game in Detroit. The last time they beat the Lions, it was on the Hail Mary on Thursday night. The Lions play them really well. And I think this will be a tough game for the Packers.
Michael Lombardi joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Huge game in Pittsburgh where the Falcons, you want to talk about being competitive, they're 1-3 and could be 4-0, but you know they failed to finish several of those games in Philadelphia, couldn't block that defensive line we talked about. Obviously, the Saints game was one. There was a 50-51. Same with the Bengals. They take on the Steelers, and it feels like loser of this game, especially Steelers at home. You lose this game, man, your playoff hopes become very, very slim, especially in a much more competitive division with the Bengals being back and the Browns being competitive. Am I overselling the importance of this game?
No, not at all. I think it's a huge game. I think the reality here of this game is the fact that the Steelers now have lost three straight home games. They lost last year to Jacksonville, and they've lost two right now. Can they lose four? They've never lost four with Mike Tomlin. They're 19-9 at home in the last few years playing, and I think they've been more vulnerable. But I get the sense here Atlanta's a wounded team. Grady Jarrett won't play this week to go along with a bunch of other defensive starters. Their defense can't slow anyone down. And then when you really watch Matt Ryan, when he doesn't play at home, he's not as effective as an offensive player. I think the Steelers get off the schneid. I think right now the Falcons are a hurt team. They're a wounded team. It has nothing to do with anything other than the injuries that really hurt them.
Michael Lombardi, pick up his new book, download his podcast. It's called GM Street. Very easy to download. All of his stuff is easily consumable, and you find yourself learning something. Thanks so much for joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Thanks, Doug.
Pleasure is all mine. That's Michael Lombardi.